To the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. The Dodgers are 1-1 in the playoffs after going 1-1 since we last recorded. They are tied in the NLDS. This isn't as an impressive a way to open the show in the playoffs, Eric.
I will say, yeah, like, look, man, they're a 500 team right now. What can you say?
Yeah, just perfectly average. Tale of two games. We're going to talk about both. We're going to look at the next games ahead, kind of pick off some highlights and maybe talk about some things that we've definitely noticed going on in the Twitterverse, all that after this.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So you and I recorded a couple of nights ago, and we basically said, looking towards the Nationals, that they're average-ish kind of across the board, except below average mightily in the bullpen, but very, very above average when it comes to three starting pitchers, and that the Dodgers were massive favorites when those three weren't pitching, and maybe slight dogs, maybe worse when they were. And I think we nailed it.
I think so. And not just below, like they're like worst in the majors, bad bullpen wise.
Yes.
And like as a quick tease, they showed like their desperation in that, like in their, so like if you count their wild card game, like they use Strasburg in relief for three innings in the wild card game. Well, that's a winner take all game. It's you know, that things get crazy in those type of games. They use Scherzer in relief in game two. So like they're using their three-headed monster of a starting unit as often as humanly possible at this point.
And you could see the flip side of that on just how bad they are when it's not those three guys. When in game one, a very close game, they have to go to the pen to try to keep it close, and you go to Fernando Rondi and Hunter Strickland.
Yeah. I saw the rosters come out, but I think I sort of glossed over them, and I guess I haven't been paying enough attention to Nationals, because I legit was like, oh, they have Fernando Rondi. Like, you know, this is a bad thing to admit as a baseball writer, but like, I was like, oh, that's where he is. I mean, I knew he was still around, and like, but yeah, I was like, okay. Yeah, so that's kind of funny.
So let's just kind of talk quickly about both games. Do you want to go in reverse order? I always feel like we should start with the bad news. Maybe because I'm so depressed. You and I got on the call to do the podcast today, and the first thing I said to you is that game was really good, right? Talking about game two.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the playoffs will, like, sort of put you through the ringer. Like, you know, just, like, your stomach will be in knots. And like, even in games that the team you're rooting for is winning, like, you'll feel like you just like sat in a sauna for like 3 hours or something when you're done with it, because you're just like exhausted or like, oh my god, that's crazy. But yeah, so it gets like that. Like, there are times when you feel like desperation. Like, there were times definitely in game two for the Dodgers, but then like hope, and then like, oh, and then disappointment. Like, you know, or like, it's just kind of this weird, you're always, it's this like constant nervousness that sort of endemic, I think, in the playoffs.
I think it kind of went away in game one when Gavin Lux hit the home run. Because like, by the time Jock was, you know, fouling balls off to Mars, I was enjoying it like I would a regular season game. The kind of the stress was off at that point. That never left in game two.
No, yeah, for sure. Like, the Jock foul ball was crazy. Like, and then he followed it with, like, just an absolute rocket of a home run that, like, if it didn't hit the foul pole, it, like, might have, like, left the earth somehow. It was just, yeah, I don't know. Like, So are we going game two first? Should we
yeah,
just
let's
do
let's
that?
Start with game two. I think that's what game one's going to be fairly quick. Dodgers are good, Walker Buehler good, but game two, I think that I'm sure is what I'm still reeling from. I'm sure our listeners are still reeling from. Let's unpack it a little bit.
Okay, so I guess a big takeaway for me, well, A, Steven Strasburg was great. Like, he was magnificent, right? Like,
this is really interesting because your first 2 points are he was pitching, you know, Strasburg was really, really good, and yeah. Then the Dodgers offense was really, really bad. It's interesting to try and figure out where is that line.
Yes.
How much of this is the Dodgers being bad versus Strasburg just being phenomenal?
Well, I mean, so if we just go back to our preview where we said, look, this is an awful lot like the 2017 NLDS where Arizona, like, completely spent their top two starters going in the wild card game. And then, but then we said, well, Patrick Corbin's better than Taijuan Walker because the Dodgers jumped all over him.
And that proved to be right. Yeah.
Right. And then but then Steven Strasburg played the Robbie Ray role. Robbie Ray was who absolutely owned the Dodgers that year. He had 50 something strikeouts in 5 starts. Strasburg, same deal. On 2 days rest, he pitched 3 dominant innings in the wild card game, but he only threw 34 pitches. But still, 2 days rest after that—that's a rough. That's a rough go. And he was I was sitting next to Kyle Glazer of Baseball America, and he said, at some point in the game, he's throwing a no hitter tonight. That's how good he looked. And he had a perfect game into the fifth. Will Smith got the single, but we were laughing. We're like, in a way that saves Dave Martinez because it would have been a stretch to push Strasburg to all 9, especially since he pitched 3 innings 3 days prior. And but he was so good. But if you sort of get balance it out, he obviously gets credit for such a great performance. He struck out 10 in 6 innings, and they didn't really score on him until the 6th. But I'm just looking at the Statcast sort of breakdown of the game, and that you could look at pitchers for each side, and it shows a little the dot placement where all the pitches were relative to the strike zone. And obviously it's not perfect because not all the strike zones are the same, but just a quick count of this, and it doesn't say which ones are swinging or taken, but he got 22 total strikes on pitches that were outside of the strike zone. And even if you want to be generous and say the ones that actually touch part of the line, so you could say it was a borderline strike, if you take those away, I think it looks like he has 18 strikes on pitches out of strike zone. And one of the Dodgers' main things this year is how they've gotten better over the last couple years is how they don't chase, as much. They're the best team in the league at not chasing, and they chased a lot against Strasburg. So that was huge in keeping them off balance. And they ended up striking out 17 times the whole game. Overwhelming performance by Strasburg, but also the offense contributing to that somehow. You never know if it's nervousness, if it's just bad day or what, but that's
just a good, great pitcher being great. Sometimes that just happens.
Right. I mean, he had multiple pitches working in addition to his fastball, and sometimes you just have to tip your cap. But then that's the thing. We talk about being in a short series. They're going to have to face him again if it goes game 5, I'm pretty sure. So you have to solve that at some point. You can get away with it by winning the next 2 games in Washington and avoid Strasburg again. But it's a rough ask. So that's the danger of these a 5-game series. So there you go.
We're going to cover, I think, a little bit of game 1 when we talk about sort of the rationale between the way the rotation was set and then what it's going to look like going forward. Let's just jump onto the other side. We've kind of praised Strasburg a lot. How bad has the Dodgers offense been? And do you see any hope kind of coming from the ashes as we move on to Washington?
They're dead. No, I'm kidding. Oh. I don't know. It's I think we got asked this a few times. Is there what can stop the Dodgers in October? It's A, they could just not hit, right? That was the main thing, because they really haven't hit the last 2 World Series. And we're only, again, stressed, we're talking about 2 games. So
in one game where, and again, I think honestly between both games, when it wasn't Corbin, Scherzer, or Strasburg pitching for the Nationals, the Dodgers looked like the Dodgers.
Right. So in two games, they're hitting 190, 288, 365. So take of that what you will. They scored 8 total runs, so 4 runs a game. Not terrible, but like, you know, it's Jekyll and Hyde at this point because it was 6 in one game and 2 in the other. But they only got 3 total runs off the starters and then 5 off the bullpen. So that, you know, look at where you got to get into that bullpen, basically.
Okay, so how bad have they been? Give me some numbers here, Eric.
Okay, so like the main thing that stuck with me was like, I don't think AJ Pollock should bat third in this lineup. Like, he batted third against Steven Strasburg basically because he was 7-for-14 lifetime with 4 extra base hits. I think 2 of them, 2 home runs or something, or maybe it was 2 home runs and a double and a triple. Mike Pedriello, I think, tweeted something like about how, you know, like matchup stats, you don't necessarily go off those, but he, like his last like 7 balls in play were all like 100 or like near 100 miles an hour or higher. Like he's basically been crushing the ball off him. I get it. But that said, like, man, like it's a rough go when he's the third hitter and like through 2 games, he's 0-for-8 with 6 strikeouts. So like, and a walk. So that's tough. Like they had Seager batting 7th against Strasburg. I get it against the lefty, but like against Strasburg, that's rough. I don't get why they try to, it seemed like they were trying to distance. No, because they had Bellinger and Muncy back-to-back, but like they only have Sean Doolittle as a left-hander in the bullpen. So like, it's not like, and plus all those guys can hit lefties anyway. So you shouldn't be that worried about like some sort of late game maneuver. I don't think Seager should be batting as low as 7th. I don't think Pollock should be batting 3rd. That said, Corey Seager also, like, it really comes down to like big stars like not hitting. Corey Seager's one of them. He had a 9 pitch strikeout to end the game with the bases loaded in game 2. He's 1-for-8 with 3 strikeouts. Cody Bellinger is 0-for-6 with 4 strikeouts. He's walked twice. And then, you know, look, it's hard to like glean anything off postseason, but like just look at Corey Seager's career. Like, we'll do him first, right? 28 postseason games, 118 plate appearances. Again, that's basically like a month, right? Like maybe a heavy month of playing time. 208, 280, 340. Not very good. 3 home runs. Cody Bellinger, 132 plate appearances, 33 games. 164, 227, 320. So like he was, okay, so NLCS in 2017, he hit 318. He was 7-for-22. He hit a home run, 2 doubles, really good. Since then, 1, 2, 3, 4. This is his 5th series. His highest OPS, it was 591 for any of those series since. So, like, you got to hit, man. Like, I know he had the 17 strikeouts in the 2017 World Series. That was a record. Like, he's done better in that regard since, but, like, it, you know, it's one of these. I don't really care so much about like the narrative because people are going to say what they're going to say. But like, if you keep having games like this, that's never going away, right? Like, you have to hit at some point. Like, at some point, the Dodgers like stars have to hit, and those are 2 of their stars. So like, it would be cool if those guys were actually hitting. So I don't know. Those are like the 3 that stood out. Muncy's been really good. He hit a mammoth home run in game 2. He had the break open 2-run single in game 1 that made it went from a 2-0 game to a 4-0 game. And again, that was off off the bullpen. So Turner's been pretty good. He's 2-for-8. He had a double. He started the rally in the 9th on Friday in game 2, but then they left the bases loaded. Jock Peterson had the mammoth home run. He also doubled. So, like, I don't – but it, like I said, it's 2 games. Like, you hope things are going to come around. But
2 games where right. – I know I'm belaboring this point at right now, but where 2 of – Strasburg and Corbin especially are 2 of the best pitchers against the Dodgers. And so they keep doing their thing. But that's the thing, right? The Nationals came in. Here are their stars. Here's what they've done in the past. And they're doing that. And then trying to mask the deficiencies. And the Dodgers have these great, also have great starters, one of whom did pretty good, one of them didn't, and this great offense. And that great offense needs to maybe not be regular season great because you're going against these great pitchers, but needs to be better than the numbers you just gave us.
Yeah, like they just, the occasional hit, right?
Yeah.
Like, a clutch hit or something like that. That'd be great. The other thing too, we keep saying, well, it is just two games, but that's the postseason, yeah. Right? Like,
you do two more of that.
No matter what, like the most this series can go is five games. So we'll look back and it'll be like, look, you can't really judge much on five games, but guess what? Your season depends on it. So like, you know, at some point you have to sort of have that come through. Like, so yeah, they need to hit. And then they're probably going to, they haven't officially announced yet, but like, they're probably going to start Scherzer in game three. Like, it would be a shock if they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you just...
I think game four is going to be really interesting for the Nationals. So we can get right into sort of rotation stuff, and we'll start with the Nationals.
Yeah.
I would be, again, Scherzer just didn't pitch that much in game two yesterday. So I would be shocked if he doesn't, one, pitch in game three, and then outside of him laying an egg, and even bad Scherzer, I think, is going to look closer, kind of what like Clayton Kershaw looked like yesterday, where he'll be fine. They shouldn't need to do anything too distressful, but that means game four, I think, becomes really interesting. Presumably, they would start Anibal Sanchez, but yes. At any point, is it just Anibal Sanchez in the bullpen, or do those other two guys find a way to get a side session in?
I would say Corbin would be available in a game four, because like it would be 3 days rest for him, but like, definitely available out of the bullpen. And
but
then they
is he available for short, and then he's also going to start game five?
No, Strasburg, I would bet money no matter what.
Yeah,
Strasburg
makes
starting
sense.
Game five.
That makes sense.
It's full rest for the game two starter. So Corbin will be available at least in game four, maybe in game three. But like, I think it'd be more likely in game four, like if Anibal Sanchez is struggling and he only goes like four or something, and you just have Corbin pick up the slack. I don't know. So Scherzer, like, the not quite Strasburg level, but he sort of struggled in the Walker game. He basically, like you mentioned, struggled early. He ended up giving up three runs in five innings in the wild card game, and then Strasburg came in. But then he pitched again Friday, also on 2 days rest. Like, Strasburg obviously started, so it's bigger. But Scherzer was awesome, man. Like, he came in and struck out all three batters in the eighth. Like he was the world's
in
best
like 14
setup, man.
Pitches,
like,
too.
Something yeah.
Like ridiculous.
And he was, like, pumping it up there. I think it was, like, 98, 99, if I'm not mistaken. And so he was absolutely pumped up. So that was, like, an uber bullpen session. But like we were talking about this, like I think I'm short shrifting Corbin here a little bit, but like so far, the Nationals in this series have pitched 17 innings, and Scherzer and Strasburg have pitched seven. And then if you go back to the wild card game, they pitched eight of the nine. So like they're at that's 15 out of 26. It's over half. In the 2017 NLDS where the Nationals came up just short to the Cubs, and that's where Scherzer had a bad relief appearance in Game 5, and he ended up giving up a bunch of runs, and they lost. But that series, the Nationals really relied on those two. They pitched almost half. It was 21 and a third innings out of 44. But then I was looking back at coming up short is the Dodgers in the 2015 NLDS against the Mets, also going five. That was the year Greinke and Kershaw were like a three-headed monster with Arrieta for the Cy Young. Like all three had like all-time great seasons. Sure, Kershaw struck out 300. Greinke had like a 1.70 ERA. And those two pitched 27 and a third innings out of the 44. So 62% of the series, and the Dodgers still lost in five games. So like it's a tough ask to like rely on two guys. Corbin mitigates that a little bit because he's really good. But like that's going to be the Dodgers just have to sort of endure that. Right. And pounce on everybody else, but also like you just have to like make them limit as the innings that those guys can get, like make them work
maybe,
or whatever.
Maybe you can make you can get a win or two out of the next three games only pouncing on everyone else, but that's a risky proposition. That's a tightrope you're on. You have to solve at least one of those other three. Otherwise, I don't see the Dodgers winning this series.
Right. That's right. I think you have to have a game where you get one of them out of there after five innings or something where their pitch count's just crazy high.
Game one, I think, is the formula I think the Dodgers were probably looking for. Like, sure, that like Corbin looked good against the Dodgers. He had kind of a rough first inning, threw too many pitches, and had to leave early. But largely dominated the Dodgers. Dodgers didn't really get a lot going outside of that first inning, but they chased him early enough that they got meaningful innings from everyone else. And I think two of the next three games have got to look like that.
I agree.
So we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to talk about the Dodgers side of the pitching. So Walker Buehler. Talk to me about Walker Buehler. I need something good to think about.
Okay, so the Dodgers went with... I think this is another thing we talked about, like, what are they going to do rotation-wise? Like,
and we settled we thought it would be Ryu to start game one, but we would not be surprised if Walker Buehler got the call.
Yeah, because, like, just if, when it comes down to it, like, brass tacks, like, Buehler has the best stuff by far on the staff and, like, the highest ceiling. Like, he's going to give you the wow start, like, more often, but also maybe might have a clunker in there. He's the most volatile, but also the best probably. So like, and he was very good. Like, and if you look at it, he's like sort of building up a nice little run of these. Like I know he gave up the grand slam last year to Acuna in the Atlanta series, but he started game 163, won that pitching scoreless ball. He pitched an awesome game in game three of the World Series. And then Kenley Jensen blew it. And then Max Muncy ended up winning that game in 18. But, like, and then you add this on there, he had six scoreless innings. I think he struck out eight. Looked awesome. Very much, like, showed he was deserving of the game one start. And, like, that sort of played out. And then it was basically, as we guessed, like, with Kershaw pitching that Sunday in relief, like, he was going to be the game two guy. He struggled early. He actually hit two guys, like, in the first two innings, and the Nationals scored three runs like early, but then he did recover to finish six innings. I'll say this: so far this series, all four starting pitchers, two for both teams, they've all gone exactly six innings. In the rest of the playoffs, only three out of the 12 games has the starter pitched six innings. So, like, this is a starting pitching heavy series, and it's showing, like. And so, like, that's it. I know, you know, like, Kershaw, he had a 4.50 ERA, right? Like, that's the bottom line. So it wasn't very good. But the fact that he got through six after the bad start was, like, positive, and it helped. Yeah, it was just weird. I'll say this. I didn't see the whole thing about tipping pitches. I think there was a thing where I think that the TBS broadcast picked it up or something. They showed something in the dugout. Where the Nationals seemed to be picking up what Kershaw was throwing. He went away from the fastball early and started throwing more breaking balls later and was more effective, so maybe that was part of it. But during the post-game presser, someone asked Trey Turner about this, like, were you able to pick something up off Kershaw? And he had, like, the most, like, terse answer ever. He's just like, no. It was just, you know, normally the players will, like, expand on stuff and talk about it. He's just, no. So, like, to me, that, I mean, look, I don't want to put words in somebody's mouth, but that's a clear yes. Like, they're obviously not going to say much about it. But this brings up another thing, like tipping pitches is one thing. You still have to make effective pitches, even if they know what's coming, like, and you could still be effective. And Kershaw kind of showed that. Like, this came up a lot when Yu Darvish was terrible in the 2017 World Series. And, like, the Astros picked him up. They were picking up his pitches, but he was also bad, like, command-wise, and it really hurt him. So, like, it's not that he would have been dominant necessarily because they knew what's coming, but you could still be effective. And baseball is not like a some sort of video game where you just select, if you select the right pitch, it's automatic home run, something. But like, so yeah, I don't know. But like, yeah, Kershaw was sort of effective after that. But like, you know, again, it comes down to like, what if the Stars, you know, did well? Like Buehler did well. Kershaw didn't, you know, he was effective, but okay. Bellinger didn't do well. Seager didn't do well. And they're still 1-1. So like, at some point you got to rely on these guys to actually do something.
Speaking of a guy they have to rely on, so Buehler certainly deserving of game one start. We talked about that. We wouldn't have surprised us. But I think ultimately the decision laid on Hyunjin Ryu has looked tired. Giving him extra rest has proved an effective strategy to battle that in September. This both keeps him on only pitching one game this series and gives him the longest rest into pitching game three. He has to come through.
Yes, and that's the other thing. Like, so while the Nationals probably have Scherzer in game three, the Dodgers have Ryu, who was their best pitcher all year. Like, so like that's a good sign. And then a lot of people, like the criticisms of this move of like not pushing Kershaw to game three.
Yeah, a lot of people have like looked at home and road splits and like lefty righty stuff, and it's like, look, your first three starters were going to be these three guys. There's no way around that. There's a little bit of who's could in theory be more effective out of the bullpen, probably Kershaw in that role. But I think ultimately it laid on how much rest they wanted to get Ryu.
Yeah, like so he looked gassed in those four starts where he was bad, including the back to back 7-run games and one against the Yankees. And like I don't know, he had, so they skipped him once. He came back into the rotation. And then his last three starts were all 7 innings, really good. It was on 9 days rest, 7 days rest, and 5 days rest. And then that his next start on Sunday is going to be on 7 days rest. So I think they're trying to just sort of keep that going rest-wise. Also, you're right about the home and road. Like, Ryu was better at home. He was also better on the road of the three. Like, so having him go on the road, like, he'll be fine. Like, I don't think – it's not like – any one of the three would be like, man, we have to get this guy in the right stadium. Otherwise we're screwed. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not like a couple years ago they had where they didn't like Rich Hill, like pitching in either Arizona or Colorado, mostly because of his curveball and like, or not being, getting the break he wanted and stuff. So they tried to avoid that. This is not that situation. So the home road split's not a big thing. Like they have their best road starter going in their first road game. So that's fine. The other thing that sort of made Kershaw pretty obvious for game two is that they're never going to pitch Ryu in relief. So you're never going to see him coming in and pitching a set up eighth inning like Scherzer did. The one guy, or they would do Buehler if they had to, but they would definitely do Kershaw. That's part of the reason they had him sort of do that Sunday, the last day of the regular season. And it's more likely that Kershaw would be available in relief in game, I guess, five is probably the best bet if he pitched game two, like rather than the day after, like, or like a couple days after of game three. Like, I guess they want him available in relief at some point in four or five. And if he pitched game three, that's not going to happen. And so him pitching game two, there's going to be at least 2 days rest before game four and 4 days rest to game five. So they're going to have Buehler in game five if it goes to game five. And then if they don't have to use Kershaw ahead of that, they could have a like an extended Kershaw if they had to. Like, so you could go Buehler for five and Kershaw for three or something like that. But, yeah, obviously it depends on how they're pitching. But I think that's what they're setting up for. Whereas Ryu, they don't. He's more. He just doesn't like pitching out of the pen. He's not effective doing it, and so that's, they're just going to keep him starting, and so that means game three.
Well, let's wind things down a little bit. We don't have questions from Craig for this playoff edition. That said, I'm gonna text him, get some questions for him, regardless of why you and I talk next, Eric, whether that be really, really sad news or a Game 5 preview or an LCS preview. We will have some questions from Craig. But let's talk about just some of our favorite moments. Even though Game 2 was a loss and kind of a heartbreaking loss, it had some really good moments. And obviously, in a 6-0 win, you're going to have a lot of good moments there.
Yeah, so in that, the two big moments there, well, Muncy had, we talked about this earlier, the sort of the break open single that went from a 2-0 game to a 4-0 game, and you're like, okay, this game's kind of in the bag at this point.
Can I just, it was at that single I texted a friend of mine. It's funny, this storyline gets played up a little bit more in national games, and I think it's kind of gone by the wayside this season. How happy I am that Max Muncy is real. After that last season, we in our season preview, we talked about it. Was this real? Was this a fluke? And the truth of the matter is that Max Muncy is a damn good baseball player.
Right, and he basically put up like the same season as last year. Playing
much better defense. Like, I know he's still you wouldn't call him a defensive star, but whereas he was a liability at second last season, he was fine this season.
Right, and like they do a great job of positioning everybody, and like we talked about, they shipped a lot, but like having him just being capable out there and like positive is way better than expected, right? Like, so yeah, he's been good and like a very reliable and good hitter in the lineup. Hits both righties and lefties. His home run in game two.
Like, his bat, like when you like all baseball players go through bad streaks, his bad streaks are never that bad. Like, just what an impressive job.
Yeah, very, very, and it's like a good story too, because was basically a journeyman minor leaguer, and like he sort of revamped his swing, worked hard, he got it. The other two like home run type things were Jock's home run was insane, because he hit it like it was 115 miles an hour, and it like it clanged off the foul pole, you know, like man, this he hit that so hard.
And after two foul balls, really, like one that went behind the screen and almost left the stadium behind Dodger Stadium. And another that was a rocket kind of right into the left field section, third base section.
The one that he pulled was like, that is an impossible angle. Like it's almost, I don't know how he did that. Like that almost broke physics, like basically. But then Gavin Lux, he hit a home run he didn't start game one because they started the lefty Corbin. And they had, I guess, Lux was in the batting cage. And they had Beatty standing on deck to hit for the pitcher.
No, man, don't remind me. My prediction for the first pinch hit.
Oh, right. That's right. And then, at some point, like, they go, hey, you're going to bat. And so he, like, oh, okay. And then, like, he basically ran from the cage to the dugout, and, like, Beatty was a decoy. And they brought Lux up, and then he absolutely hammered a ball too for a home run. And then, the guy who caught it, like he bounced and went into a trash can in the pavilion. And like, and then Lux was like, "Did you go dumpster diving?" Like, he said that to him. And we actually saw this, like, because we're waiting to go into the clubhouse post game, and like Lux and like some of the Dodgers PR people and the guy were like sitting there and they were talking. It was pretty cool. It was a nice little moment. But then the next day, Lux was talking about it, and he said, I think Bill Plaschke asked him about if he knew much about 1988. And he said he didn't know much, but like he knew about like Kurt Gibson, obviously, and he did like the fist pump thing. And then Plaschke goes, "Do you know who he hit the home run off of?" And he's like, "Wait." And he's like, and then he couldn't think of it. He goes, "Okay, tell me." He goes, Dennis Eckler's, he goes, "All right, the mustache." It was like the perfect answer. It's so good. So that was really good. And then the other thing that sort of stood out to me, Adam Kolarik, right? He has a very specific role in this series, and he's going to face Juan Soto at some point in a key moment. He struck him out on three pitches in game one, and then he had a 9-pitch at bat in game two. So that it was like, and he got a ground out of it, but like that those are fun. He has a very specific role, lefty. He's a loogie, and he's been used to that extent. So that's been kind of a fun little matchup.
And then my favorite part is this has been a lot of fun, especially on text messaging and Twitter and on Friend, is anytime we actually get to the Nationals bullpen. Because, boy,
right,
is that a cavalcade of iffy suspects in the bullpen.
Yeah, so, like, just a quick rundown. Of course, I was looking at the wrong team there. The Nationals have allowed 8 runs. Yeah, 3 runs in let's say, 13 innings from their starters, because Scherzer is a starter. He happened to pitch in relief. And then in the other 4 innings, the Dodgers have 5 runs. So that said, like, those 2 rocket home runs by Jock and Gavin Lux were off Hunter Strickland. I don't think we'll see Hunter Strickland again in the series. Like, we might if it's like a blowout game or something, like in a meaningful inning. And they were down 4-0. So it's going to be a stretch to see him again. So, like, Muncy hit the home run off Doolittle, and he's one of their best relievers. Daniel Hudson, who was, like, really up and down last year for the Dodgers.
That was an up and down ninth.
Yeah. And, like,
one good swing of the bat away from a tie game.
And, like, those are their 2 best relievers. So, like, if you can get to those guys, like, they have a pretty good shot. But, yeah, so now it's a best of 3. The next 2, it's not guaranteed that there will be another game at Dodger Stadium this year. So they're sort of playing for that the next couple days. But, yeah, it's been a fun series.
Before we sign off, prediction.
Pain. I always do it. I think we're coming back for game 5.
Okay. There will be another game at Dodger Stadium, but it won't be game 5. There you go.
Whoa. All right. Well, yeah, that's it. And we're going to do as many of these little shorties as we can whenever we have time during the postseason. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you in a few days.